From NPR and WBUR, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
I'm Robin Young. It's Here and Now. And today, Egyptian President el-Sisi confirmed that his country attacked ISIS training camps in Libya to avenge the beheadings of 21 Egyptian Christians by the self-proclaimed Islamic State in Libya. The beheadings came to light yesterday when a Twitter account associated with ISIS posted a video purporting to show executioners decapitating Egyptian hostages on a beach in Libya. It's the most graphic video from the group.
And the news comes just as we get more details about the twin attacks over the weekend in Copenhagen carried out by a gunman who may have been inspired by ISIS. Joining us to talk about all this is Graham Wood, who has just written a cover story in The Atlantic entitled What ISIS Really Wants. And Graham, it does seem like on a weekly basis now we are learning of new videos of killings or attacks by ISIS. Is it your sense that we will continue to see these week by week?
Not even just week by week. Day by day, we see a multiple execution within the territory that the Islamic State controls. And I think in places like Europe, even possibly in the United States, we're definitely going to see more and more attacks like this. But in Europe and the United States, they're likely to be more like occasional harassment irritants. They're not existential threats to the governments or societies in Europe and the United States. But they're definitely going to become part of our regular news cycle.
And we saw in this case that Egypt retaliated for those beheadings by attacking in Libya. How significant is the ISIS population in Libya at this point?
There are parts of Libya that are controlled by ISIS. The city of Derna, part of the city of Sirte. These are parts of Libya that have given what they call allegiance to the Islamic State and are recognized by the Islamic State's caliph as belonging to him and under his control.
And have they showed up in Libya simply because it is a failed state? It's an easy place for ISIS to take territory?
Yes, that's pretty much it. One of the criteria for being part of the caliphate is that you have to be able to implement Sharia law. And Libya is a place where if you have enough guys with guns who are ideologically committed, they can certainly implement Sharia law and be a functioning part of the caliphate based in the Levant.
Well, that's what I want to ask you about, because you have done this tremendous amount of research. You've talked to a lot of people about ISIS. What is it that they want?
ISIS wants, first of all, to convert everyone to their very peculiar version of Sunni Islam. That means all 7 billion people on earth. Now, if that doesn't happen, they have a plan for the rest of us. If you're a Muslim and you do not accept them as the rightful caliph, then the only alternative is death. If you're a Christian or a Jew, then it's either death, enslavement, or living under the caliphate and paying a special tax called the jizya to the caliphate.
And when President Obama says that they are not Islamic, you say that that is a misunderstanding.
I think it's an unfortunate phrasing, certainly. And I'll tell you why. It's because the attention that the group pays to Islamic tradition and text is very intense, actually. They care a great deal about whether the ways that they implement Sharia, the foreign policy that they have, the way that the caliphate is structured, they care a great deal that that has precedent in Islamic tradition. Now, it's certainly the case that the vast, vast majority of Muslims have no interest in the Islamic State's variety of Sharia law. But at the same time, to say that they're not Islamic is to deny that the practices that they're implementing exist in the Quran, in the Hadith, and are part of Islamic tradition. They simply are. And in a way, it's a sort of silly whitewashing to describe what they do as un-Islamic when it's clear both in history and in text that practices such as slavery, such as the beheading of apostates, is something that has been historically called for in Islam.
You, for this piece, traveled to Melbourne, Australia, and you met a man identified as a lead ISIS recruiter. Could you tell us about him and what he believes and why he has decided to join ISIS? Because there is a lot of confusion about why Westerners would be interested in doing something like this.
Yeah, his name is Musa Cherantonio. His name at birth is Robert. He's a convert from Catholicism and actually a very friendly guy. I got to know him over the course of an afternoon and would happily spend another afternoon talking to him. He's kind of a bookworm. He has a very academic bent, and he has devoted his life to Islam and to calling others to Islam. And his view of things is that the caliphate that is based in Syria and Iraq is a legitimate caliphate, and that it is required when there is a legitimate caliphate to give allegiance, to fully live as a Muslim, he told me, you must give allegiance to a caliphate. And that is something that for him to do would actually be illegal because he's in Australia. It would essentially be openly claiming to be part of a terrorist organization. So he says to others that he recommends giving allegiance to a caliphate and that this caliphate is legitimate in every way that's necessary.
And this Australian that you met also believes, as do others, as you report, that the armies of Rome, I'm quoting here, will mass to meet the armies of Islam in northern Syria, and that Islam's final showdown with an anti-Messiah will occur in Jerusalem after a period of renewed Islamic conquest. What do you mean by the armies of Rome?
Well, the armies of Rome is a phrase that appears in Hadith. So it's not my phrase. It's one in Muslim apocalyptic literature, and not just apocalyptic literature that's believed by the Islamic State. What Musa Cerantonio is arguing is that the armies of Rome is a phrase that really means the armies of Turkey. So he's expecting that at the city in Dabiq in northern Syria, that the Turkish army will face off against the Islamic State, probably be vanquished, and then the Islamic State will eventually reach Istanbul, take over, and at that point, the showdown will begin in Jerusalem.
We're speaking with Graham Wood of The Atlantic, who has just published a cover story on ISIS. And Graham, Rome was actually brought up in the Libyan video that was just released yesterday.
Yes, that horrific Libyan video was actually typical of ISIS Islamic State propaganda because of its mention of these apocalyptic events. You know, a lot of these things that the executioner, who, by the way, had an American or possibly Canadian accent, a lot of the things that he was saying in that video were direct references to the apocalypse and the expectation of the return of Jesus. He said Jesus will return. He will break the cross. He will kill swine. And he will abolish the jizya, the tax on Christians and Jews living in the Islamic State. So the rhetoric that you find in almost all of the public pronouncements of this group goes straight back to this apocalyptic tradition. And a lot of it really is lost on a lot of Western commentators who aren't aware of this literature and these expectations of the group.
So what is the United States to do, given all that you've learned about ISIS? Because it sounds like they would love it if the U.S. got further involved in the fight.
Yes, they want very much for the United States to be involved in a huge ground war. So what do we do about it? One thing we might consider is first being a bit humbled by our previous occupations. It would be very, very difficult to occupy Syria. It would not be difficult to destroy the group and to make sure that the territory was controlled by Americans rather than by them. But really what they would love to do is have the propaganda victory of a crusader army attacking the Islamic State, and thereby confirming a lot of the rhetoric about this being another war between Christianity and Islam. So given that we can't be confident that we would competently hold territory there, I think it's a good thing that we have at least arrested the expansion of the group and have really, with the boots on the ground of Kurds and Iraqi Shia, made sure at least that the expansionist project has stopped and that they no longer have the propaganda victory of the kind of juggernaut that they've been able to project.
Which is very important because, as you write, unlike al-Qaeda, their legitimacy is based on a hold on territory.
Yeah, that's right. So there are a few different criteria of what it takes to be a caliph, but they're really the most difficult to achieve one, and the most important one is that the caliph has to have enough command of the territory to implement Sharia law. So if you send Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, the current caliph, underground, then he no longer controls that territory, and the pledges of allegiance that have accrued to him suddenly are no longer binding. So if we were at least to loosen his hold on that territory, that would that would really change the game as far as the legitimacy of the caliphate in the eyes of its supporters.
At the same time, you can imagine that if there is a large-scale attack by ISIS in the United States, there will be a push to get further involved in the fight against ISIS in Iraq and Syria.
And if you watch their propaganda closely, you can see they're more or less taunting us with each of those videos, attempting to get us to join the fight with American soldiers and Marines, boots on the ground. So I would not be shocked at all if they tried to get the United States involved in that way by having attempted a spectacular terrorist attack. That's very much in their playbook.
That's Graham Wood, a contributing editor to The Atlantic. His cover story out today is called What ISIS Really Wants. We'll link you to it at hereandnow.org. Graham, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.